joining me live in the studio this morning for the week that was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. We have got the opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro.
Good morning.
We've got Nine News Darwin's Kathleen Gazzola.
Morning.
We have got the incoming member for Goyder, Kezia Purick.
Thank you, Katie. Good morning.
Good morning. And Natasha Files, the incoming member for Nightcliff. And I should have said the same for Leah for Spillet. I'm not sure what to call you all at the moment because there's still a bit of, we've still got to sort of have everything verified, don't we?
Not in our seats.
Not in your seats. You're all doing
it. Didn't we say, Wolfie, these were the three safe bets?
We did. We did think they were the three safe bets. And I tell you what, good to have you all in the studio. No blokes this morning. That wasn't by design, but just good, strong women, which is always wonderful.
It's a nice change.
Now, I do want to talk firstly about the bushfires. And we know that crews were stretched to the limits yesterday with the worst conditions seen in years. Many national parks are going to remain closed today and over the weekend due to those fires and the extreme conditions. Now, the Chief Fire Control Officer of Bushfires NT and the Director of NT Fire and Rescue Service have declared a 24-hour fire ban period from midnight on Friday. Well, so for the whole day, obviously, today for Darwin, Adelaide River, Daly South, Gregory, Carpentaria, West fire weather forecast areas and the Northern and Catherine fire protection zones. Kezia, obviously, you are out in the rural area. Yep. How have things been?
Oh, pretty tough, actually. Yesterday it was sort of around that Bachelor, as you said, Adelaide River area and also down Lake Bennett. There was a house lost at the Lake Bennett area and also Mango Farm down at Lake Bennett. I think the fire went through a fellow's large mango farm, which is very tragic because now is the picking time. So he's lost his crop. You can't ensure the mangoes on the tree. But then earlier in the week, there was a massive fire in the Humpty Doo area, which is sort of behind the dump, shall we say, for those who live out that way. And it's through just 5-acre blocks or 10-acre blocks. So when these fires get going, you know, because I think they talked about the index, like it's incredibly dry at the moment, like no humidity. And, of course, there's winds of a particular time and temperature and they work out their risks and, you know, that hence the catastrophic. And I honestly can't remember catastrophic times before, not for the last 10 years. But it's always a salient time to remind people in the rural area that they should have a fire management plan, whatever it is. You know, whether it's just pack up the dogs and the kids and, you know, your valuables and just bolt back to the city or somewhere, because nothing's more precious than the life.
Now, absolutely.
For people who have animals, like we have a plan on our property, you know, if a fire comes from the north side, which it usually does, all the animals get brought into the home paddock and that's what you protect. And other people have done that too. I know the volunteer fireys at Humpty Doo see animals in paddocks and they protect that paddock. But it is hard and the resources are stretched. There's only so many volunteers on the ground because we're talking about the bushfire council volunteer units here, wherever they are. And there is backup from NT Fire Service and others, private people. But I think we just have to be very vigilant. But it also links into the gamba grass and the mission grass issue. Now, I know coming into the election, the various major parties promised certain things in regards to resource management and weed management. I think this is a wake-up call that serious resources and serious planning has to go into how can we get on top of this gamma grass problem, because it's not going away in the short term, but we've got to have... I mean, there is a big plan. Everyone's got a big plan, bushfires, anti-government resources, all that sort of stuff, local councils. Yep. But I think, you know, they really need to take stock once we've got over this immediate problem.
We do need to do more when it comes to gamba and those grasses, because as we know, gamba burns hotter, faster, and it's a lot higher. And you can even see the damage, you know, when you're driving along the Stuart Highway now and you look up at the trees, you can see that the fire has gotten to those highest points, whereas normally it wouldn't. And so that not only presents a bigger threat to people and property, but also to the wildlife as well, who are having less of an opportunity to be able to escape those fires now. So it's a critical issue going forward, and it was a big issue during the election campaign, and the government now have to turn their mind to it because there are better times than others to deal with gamba. And so when that good season approaches, to be able to get it while it's small and green, then we need to be putting in a serious effort, because for the last 2 years now, we've seen that fire season intensity grow. Last year was pretty horrific as well. And, even in places like Palmerston, we often think of fires as a rural issue. But, last year in Palmerston, right up to the back of houses in Zakoli, we had terrible bushfires. So thank you so much to all our volleys and everyone out there fighting it. But we've got to do more to prevent it.
And I think there also needs to be a strong education campaign of some description, because the Humpty Doo fire, some person had their drone up in the sky taking photos. Now, I get it, they were probably taking, you know, genuinely wanted to take good photos, but then they didn't realise that the helicopters all had to land.
That's
because,
the thing.
You know, if a drone crashed into a plane or a helicopter, that'd be all over.
Well, and I mean, so, at the end of the day, I think sometimes the punishment for some of these, you know, for people, if you're lighting fires or if you're, you know, doing the wrong thing,
they need to go up.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, that the police eventually caught a fellow who was lighting fires down Adelaide, downriver. About a couple of years ago. And supposedly they're talking to someone at this moment about some of the fires. But the penalties really need to be looked at, I think, as part of the package of how do we go into better fire management control and, you know, resource control. Because clearly it's not a deterrent. And
it needs to be.
Well, you get a particular condition on a particular day with the high winds and the low humidity, et cetera. It's only a matter
like
of time. We've lost houses before. We lose lots of sheds and we lose stock sometimes. But it's a matter of time, question time, sadly, before we start to lose serious properties and lives. And we just can't have that.
And if we're going to continue growing as well, that's certainly a lot of more people are moving out into that area. And as Leah said, out into Palmerston, and you see gamba grass spreading all over the place. So, I mean, you know, Wolfie, you and I have done a few elections now, and I don't think gamba grass has been a major issue, political issue in the past. So it was interesting to see that this time around.
So
hopefully that means that there is that commitment to actually
do something.
Well, as a government, we've committed to that Gamba Army, giving them resources. And we also built the new bushfires headquarters out in the rural area. So very much acknowledging that we need to tackle this issue back when the grass is less threatening, but giving the resources and acknowledging all those volunteers, and particularly with another hot, dry day out there today, a shout out to them.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
We are proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions, and of course it is The Week That Was. In the studio this morning, Leah Finocchiaro, Kathleen Gazzola, Kezia Purick and Natasha Files. And I've got a message here and it says, "Hi Katie, drones are not toys and CASA has regulations for commercial operators. Education is needed within the community. By the way, love the fact that your panel is all strong women."
And all the men just turned off.
I knew that would get a response, a reaction. Wasn't expecting one quite so strong. Good on you, ladies.
So you wanted to talk about last weekend, the footy?
Oh, well, so much to talk about from last weekend, and obviously the election result. We do know that counting is going to resume today following last weekend's NT election, and we know that the ALP has got at least 13 seats, the CLP 5 at this stage, and 2 independents. We've still got 5 remaining, very close. Incredibly close, you'd have to say. Way too tight to call.
Yeah, it's nail-biting, and I certainly feel for our candidates. I mean, you know, we're up 6 votes in some seats, down 13 in others, so it's a very, very close race.
Has it ever been that close before, like with some of these seats?
I don't know. Last election, 2016, there were a couple that were won and lost on 30, 80, 100 votes. Catherine was one, Breitling was one, Blaine was one.
And Nullumboy was one.
Yeah, it was
very close. So I think what's happening is, and maybe this trend will continue into the next election, general election, that people are taking, well, I think anyway, people are taking their voting very seriously.
As they should.
Now, just for the reference, the people of Goyta had the highest turnout of voters.
Did they?
Ah, that's good.
But we also had
for
Nycliffe, we also had the lowest vote for the Greenies. So that tells you something about the rural area.
Except my Greenies, Kezia.
But I think people
are looking you there. She's giving you the evil eye.
I'm going to go back and check, but that's what I was told by my people. Anyway, that aside, I think people are, even though there was poor voter turnout in the bush, and I think there's explanations for that, I think people did take their voting seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, hence the number going pre-polling. I think it was an interesting election in many ways, but I think we're going to see this into the future, the closer the seats, because people do think about their policies, think about what's been put on the table. And I could say, you know, sometimes the electorate never gets it wrong, but in some cases they do. But
I don't think the electorate doesn't fall your way.
Not in our seats, but in some seats.
Explain. Well, and, you know, I guess that's something that I certainly said on Monday morning as well. You know, the electorate does always get it right, whether you like the result or not. That is the voice of the people, and the people have voted, and this is the way that they've voted. And in some cases, you know, we're going to see that seats may be won or lost within a five-seat, you know, difference, which is quite quite unbelievable. I guess the other part of the discussion this morning, whether we go to it now or whether it evolves to this, is whether Territory Alliance did disrupt the vote the way that we had thought that they might. And I think that you'd have to argue in some seats that was the case. Leah, how did you feel, I guess, from the Conservative side of politics? Do you think that that Territory Alliance did sort of cut into that Conservative side of politics?
Yeah, look, I you know, Territory Alliance were a very unusual and confusing proposition. They would flip-flop from one issue to the next. One minute they were Conservative, next minute they're ideology free, they're pro-fracking, ban fracking, they're not going to preference Labor, then they did preference Labor. It was a very confusing political proposition, I guess, as I said earlier, and there's no doubt that eroded, votes from both sides. But obviously, the results speak for itself. You know, you can't be all things to all people. People respect you when you have a position on something, whether they like the position or not. But you get respect for having one, and Territory Alliance just didn't.
It'll be fascinating, the wash up from it, both all the different views and all the analysis of all the stats. Because I mean, it's a complete 180 to how they perform in Johnston versus how they then performed, you know, 6 months later. And I think it's sort of, even just the start of pre-poll, how Territory Alliance were tracking, and then it seemed to be their campaign kind of, the wheels fell off a bit, and Terry just kind of couldn't get the message out. And certainly not.
I've got to say, I do think that that decision on fracking became a very confusing one for a lot of people in the electorate. A lot of people sort of went, okay, well, we thought this was more of a Conservative party, but now we're not so sure. So it changed the way maybe that some Conservative voters were planning to sort of cast their vote. I know the other interesting element that's come into play this week is there's been that discussion about the northern suburbs and whether the northern suburbs have seen a real surge in votes from the public service. But one observation that I would make is that I think what Labor did very well in the northern suburbs is had good, strong candidates.
They had good candidates.
And you can't dispute that. You know, if you've got people, I mean, look, all the three of you that are elected members in this room, you know better than anybody else. If you're out on the doors and you're out there knocking on doors, you know, 3-4 times in a year, and you're actually a really good and heavily involved local member, people are going to vote for you again.
Katie, Territorians have always really respected the local member, and they've always been able to do that. And I point to the 80s and 90s, where Warren Snowden was our elected member federally for most of that period with one seat, yet we had, you know, the Conservative CLP government in power at a territory level. And then I think you've seen that, you know, more recently when you had a Labor government, and then, you know, Natasha Griggs was elected federally. So, and people do very much, because we represent small communities, they have that relationship with you, and they want to, you know, see you out and about, and that very much, that incumbency, it's something that you've got to work hard, and people see through that when you don't. They know that you're their representative and you genuinely care about their community. So Territorians have made their choice. We respect that. I think that the Territory Alliance vote was interesting, but people did tend to come back to either their local member or a party that they perhaps had supported
Falsey,
before.
Did you think that Labor would pick up 13 seats so convincingly?
Territorians, for me, I felt that they had trusted us with the job that we'd done. Certainly going forward, you know, there's things they certainly, we heard the message around the economy and some safety issues, community safety. But overwhelmingly, I felt that they had respected the job that we'd done, that we hadn't lost their trust in those 4 years. But we certainly have a big task ahead of us going forward.
I think incumbency is certainly something in the Northern Territory, because we do have those small seats, you know. Just because you're elected doesn't mean you'll get re-elected. You've got to put in the work and be there for your community. And with 5,000 people in each seat, there is absolutely no reason why you can't have gotten around to everyone and really be accessible and a local presence in your community. And so, you know, some people vote for the party, some people vote for the policies, and others vote for the person who they think is going to have their best interest at heart at that very local level. And I think this election showed that at that local level, it's certainly something that people paid a lot of emphasis on. And for us to be really so close to winning 10 seats, I just think it shows how hard our team worked. And it's a credit to them. They were exceptional candidates and they worked really hard right across the territory.
Katie, I think it's also important to, you know, some of our colleagues haven't been re-elected and perhaps, you know, and they have worked very hard as local members and perhaps, you know, that's why so many of the seats are tight, in the sense that you've got previous, you know, we're not sure of the final result. So, yeah. But we've got some people that, you know, worked incredibly hard as local members and people respected that. I have people that, you know, tell me that they traditionally vote Liberal and particularly at a national level, but they support me. And so perhaps that's why, you know, you have seen hardworking local members and that's come through.
And I think coronavirus in this instance as well has played a big factor. Yeah. I mean, changing a government during the middle of a public health emergency is a big call, and having to have a restart of what you know in the background and all those briefings.
And, you know, some of us in the media were quite critical of the government going down that path and only focusing on coronavirus. I'll happily put my hand up and say I didn't think that it was the best election task to go down. And the reason that I've thought that, and we'll get to it in a moment, is because I think the next 4 years of government are going to be an incredibly difficult 4 years in terms of managing the economy. It's not only going to be a health emergency. It's going to be an economic one, and we're going to have a lot of other issues that sort of evolve out of that. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But just to sort of go back to the election result, Kathleen, some of these seats are incredibly tight. I mean, when you look at somewhere like Araluen, and you've got Robin Lamley there on 2,138 votes, Damien Ryan on 2,125. Do you recall in the elections that you've covered, you know, that number of seats being that close?
No, and I mean, I did ask Leah Tash and Kezia about that in the ad break, how often we see it that close, and I can't recall it at all. I mean, Namadira is six votes. And Labor were leading just a couple of days ago, and now CLP has come in front because of postals. So.
And just a couple of things, I'm going back to what Kathleen was saying. It's human nature, and it's in our DNA that when things are very uncertain, we're reluctant to change. And I had a couple of elderly women who lived not in my electorate, lived in, I don't know, Casuarina or somewhere like that, and they were not going to vote for change. And they're not Labor supporters, or they're not Labor voters traditionally, but they didn't want to change because they're uncertain because of coronavirus and all that sort of thing. But the other thing I think we've all got to look at in the votes is you've got to look at, of course, your primaries and then your flow of preferences. Yep. Now, in my area, and I can't speak for anyone else's, they did not follow their how to vote cards. I know they're a guide and people like them, some people do, but I've picked up a swag of preferences out of Alliance, and I also picked up a swag of preferences out of the Labor Party, now, which is good, so thank you, those parties. But I think people, as I said before, people are a little bit more discerning these days. And also the other issue we had with this election is the new arrangements and the new rules in regards to the Electoral Act.
Yeah.
Now, that may have mucked up quite a few votes in some of the areas, because I know that there were challenges in one of my booths because how people had filled in their cards. And I can't speak for what may or may not have happened in the remote areas. But I personally, as the member for Goyder, would like to have a look at the Electoral Act and those changes that were passed last time, because there's some, it was just, for being a sophisticated jurisdiction, to have people sitting down on the ground because you're not allowed chairs outside the polling booth is just nonsense. And I don't have an issue with papers being in a particular place so people don't get harassed as they walked in, but I think there's a whole swag of things that contributed to the outcome of the election. None the least, you know, people either like someone's policies or they didn't like someone's policies. But there's no doubt about it in my mind that the Alliance policies were populist. For example, the promising to give a rural pool. Like they said, we'll give $10 million and some private investor will come along with 25. Mm-hmm. That's rubbish. You don't get private investors in swimming pools in communities like, you know, the rural area. So, and I think people saw through that. I can't speak for any of the other policies because I didn't pay attention, but people are starting to look more and more policies. They're not blindly following a particular party line, I find anyway.
Yeah, which is incredibly important. Leah, are you happy? I mean, I think we might move that discussion now into really what's going to happen in the next 100 days, but are you happy with the fact that, you know, are you happy and do you feel satisfied with the campaign in which you ran and the issues on which you ran?
Absolutely, Katie. My team right across the territory works so hard, and our policies reflected what Territorians were telling us, and that was that they were tired of having the worst performing economy, they couldn't believe the $8.2 billion debt, and they wanted safer communities. And the government had no plan, no plan. They still don't have a plan to address these issues. They've won, and now it's incumbent upon them to get on with the job, because you cannot just be a one-trick pony. You know, you've got to be able to manage a health pandemic and do all the other things that keep people in work, keep people safe, and keep people living in
and
the territory.
And that's absolutely what we've done, Katie. Treasury modelling shows that we've saved nearly $7,000. We've thrown everything at it, the Small Business Survival Fund, the Home Improvement Scheme. As a jurisdiction, we've rolled out so many measures to support small business, and we haven't seen that in other jurisdictions.
Look, Natasha, that's all great, but the reality is you guys did not put forward a plan during the election. You have not changed any of your policies going forward, and up to this point, you guys have not done a good job. So you
that's
need to now
rubbish.
Refresh.
We've had the worst performing economy in the nation. And we have also
put in place strong measures.
What do you call the Sun Cable project? The battery. We've diversified the economy, shifting to renewables.
When will the first shovel on Sun Cable happen? When will the first sod
be
turned on Sun
Cable?
Well,
the federal government, Scott Morrison, backs that project.
Yeah,
so
that's fine, but
we have done a really good job in terms of managing the health crisis, but also supporting small business, the tourism vouchers.
Now's not the time to be arrogant. Your government has really got to get cracking. People are absolutely waiting. People are leaving. Businesses are closing. We respect the fact that you've won, but there is no time to lose, and you're going to have to change the way you do things. Your approach has to be different this time around, because whatever you did last time just was not working.
So, and Katie, I was at the, and Leah was there as well, and you were there. You emceed at the Hospitality Awards.
Oh, yes, of course.
Katie's looking at me like, where was I? We're all there. But and the recognition from those mainly small businesses in that tourism and hospitality sector about the support and the practical measures that we have driven through this coronavirus crisis, I think that highlights
that's
the difference
fine,
in the Northern
Territory.
That's fine,
but what about pre-corona, Natasha? You can't just pretend like coronavirus.
In that post-impacts construction phase, and we threw everything at it, that infrastructure.
Very disappointing that you've learned nothing.
$4 billion in infrastructure.
I want to say to everybody in the room right now that there are some people who woke up on Sunday morning and they feel incredibly worried about how things are going to play out over the next 4 years when it comes to the economy. Not even just the next 4 years, but they're really worried about what's going to happen. They're worried about their businesses. They're worried about the level of debt. And you know, I know that that's the campaign, obviously, that the CLP ran. I do take your point, Leah, that I do think that realistically, the government needs to acknowledge that as well. They need to sort of, you know, you guys need to realise, and I think that the Chief Minister actually did a good job on Monday morning when he came onto the show, and he was quite humble. Mm. And he did say that, you know, that we know that there's a lot of people that didn't vote for us, and he's going to be a Chief Minister for them as well. And I think that that is a really important point here. There are people that are concerned, and I don't think that we can just sort of brush over that by saying, all right, we've got Sun Cable and a few other projects on the horizon. Because what people are sort of wanting to know is how quickly some of that work is going to be able to get underway, because they're seriously worried about their jobs.
Katie, we're heading into a wet season, as we all know, and hopefully it'll be a good wet season with La Nina, but that's traditionally a quiet time for a lot of businesses. So we've come out of a pretty poor dry season when we're meant to have lots of tourists and businesses booming, and then we're going to go into a wet season where, you know, traditionally things slow down for obvious reasons, the weather, and then turn around and come out next year. Now, I hear about the Sun Cable project, but that's a long way away. You know, you've got to have some projects now or within the next 6 to 12 months that are wealth creating. Mm-hmm. Now, and that's linked to the regulation and the authorisation processes and all that sort of stuff. And I think it might have been Leah's party, the CLP, that talked about red tape or trying to get approval processes more efficient and effective, because they're not, particularly when it comes to the resource industry. They are not efficient and they're not effective. Now, we will not attract that investment. They will go to WA. You can get a mining project approved, all the planets lining up, within about 3 years. Up here, it's up to 10. Mm. Now, our biggest competitors are not Canada and the Americas. Our biggest competitors are New South Wales, Queensland and WA. Yep. Yep. And they'll continue to go there, despite our geological potential and what we've got, including gas in that mix as well. Now, you know, it's one thing to get the people here to start looking at investment. They also want to come and have certainty. Now, yes, we've got a new government and that'll give them some certainty. There's still the critical issue of getting finance, and that's going to be one of the biggest issues with a lot of these smaller companies. Getting the finance is critical for any of these major projects, wherever it is from.
Mm.
So they're also going to be looking, the finance sector or the money sector, at how the territory is tracking and what is the government's policy on things, as, for example, its approval. Like these days, in the olden days, it used to be, you know, the sacred sites was a problem, which, you know, it wasn't, but that was the perception.
Yep.
Land rights is a problem, which it still is. But now it's not those issues that companies talk about. They talk about the approval processes in the NT government departments. That's where the stumbling block is.
And that's where we need that change. We need government to acknowledge that they haven't had a focus on that. They've been busy doing alcohol reform and other things, but now it's really important to turn their mind to the economy. They've got to look at our taxation regime for mining tax. They've got to look at our approvals processes. They've got to look at how we can better facilitate investment. These things are key because it's not about chasing major projects that are years away. Yeah. That's important background work, but it's about the now.
And what I, like, honestly, what I'd like to see, and I think what would give people some confidence is, I know that everybody in this room's got different political views on lots of different things, but I think when it comes down to trying to get the economy moving and trying to get some of those projects underway, I actually reckon we all need to be on the same page. We sort of all need to be, you know, cheering for the territory and trying our best to get things happening in the territory so that we can get people moving back here. We can make it a bustling place. No one's expecting another impex. And, you know, quite frankly, there's probably a lot of people that would prefer to see the economy diversified.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest about it. A lot of Australians are secretly looking at the Northern Territory, particularly the Victorians.
Mm.
Like,
who wouldn't want to live
here? Such a secret.
They need to have a job.
Well,
you know?
Come here, find a job, find work, whatever. But you know, this is an opportunity. You know, from bad things, good things happen, in my view. Now, with what's happened in Victoria and New South Wales, there will be some people, hopefully youngish people, employable people, who look towards the Northern Territory.
With people
come jobs, like a carpenter might come up, or a tradie of some kind, or a professional person who works into the finance sector. And I think the Chief Minister has used an expression, I can't recall it right now, about, you know, we're the safest place in Australia. You know, well, it's a good selling point. You know, we've got to get our population moving as well, because when the population moves, then the economy moves.
But the point Leah made about making sure there are jobs is a very important one, because even, you know, we can have the best campaigns going. You know, things like Boundless Possible are a great idea in theory, but if people don't have a job to move here for, it makes it really tough.
Got something, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. And I mean, I think we've all widely accepted that whoever was in government over the past 4 years would have had a tough time coming off the back of impex. But now with Labor getting the next 4 years, I think people will be extra on the government to really deliver on that economic improvement, because you can't go back and look at...
You can't blame the CLP.
I heard the Chief Minister blaming the CLP.
Are you saying I need to retire chaos and dysfunction, Wolfie?
You're going to have to. Sorry, Filesy.
It's not, you know, I heard the Chief Minister earlier in the week still talking about the previous CLP government. It's like, no, this is over to you. You wanted this job, you've got it, now you've got to deliver.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
It is The Week That Was. We're proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. And in the studio with me this morning, Leah Finocchiaro, Kathleen Gazzola, Kezia Purick and Natasha Files. And we have just received a message regarding Dan Murphy. Sorry, I'm just trying to get my phone to open. And it says, Katie, Dan Murphy's could start tomorrow with roadworks, building the store, landscaping and more buildings on the same site. Get cracking, Gunner, says that texter. And it is actually back in the media again today, Dan Murphy's. We know that their bid to launch in Darwin resumes at the NT Cat this morning, or today as I understand it, and it is expected that NT Cat will confirm dates for the next hearing, timelines for when evidence and responses need to be filed, and dates for the formal hearing. It's one of those projects, I think, that a lot of people would be quite happy for it to go ahead. I know that there's definitely some people opposed to it.
Yeah, well, I think your text is right. I mean, except that it could go ahead now, or it could have gone ahead 4 years,
four years ago.
I mean, there are other tenancies anchored around the Dan Murphy, so further economic development flows from it. And again, we've seen the government government come in at every corner and try and stop this project going ahead. I mean, we just can't, and this is where lessons need to be learnt for the Gunner government. We just can't have that type of anti-development mentality anymore.
Uncertainty, Leah.
That's
the
right.
Uncertainty it creates
anti-business,
in the business community.
That's right.
I mean, I agree with Leah. I mean, this project should have been bedded down like three years ago. It's cost the company and things associated with the company an enormous amount of money. It's cost, we've lost the opportunity. I mean, yes, it'll be there. We'll find people to build the building if it goes ahead. And I'm confident. I mean, yes, there are some issues around alcohol. There's a lot of issues around alcohol. There's a lot of issues around smoking. But with goodwill and good intention, the parties could have negotiated changes to the development or whatever.
Stricter regulations.
Exactly. To get their social licence to operate, not just their liquor licence, but also their social licence to operate. Is this going to happen another time down the road when some company or business wants to build something that's got alcohol involved or poker machines or whatever? I suppose the new RSL complex down there, they've tried to compromise to, make it fit with all the stakeholders and to address a lot of the concerns. But, this is another one of those regulation things that hasn't been effective or efficient.
It's a really difficult one. I guess what it does as well, it's a bit of a beacon, I guess you'd say, in terms of representing, everything that the CLP would argue the government has done not so well in terms of opening the territory up to business. And I understand that we're talking about an alcohol retailer here, but I guess it just goes towards that argument that, that the government makes it more difficult for people to get operating in the territory.
So, Katie, in terms of Dan Murphy's, I do need to be careful with my comments because it is going through that process, but I believe that what we have done in terms of alcohol reform, world-leading alcohol reform, is keeping our community safer, but it does allow people who drink responsibly to access alcohol. Setting up that independent liquor commission, having community have an input and a voice is important, and I'll just step away from Dan's with those comments because it is going through that process and I don't want to jeopardise anything there. Absolutely, in terms of government has a role in terms of making sure that our environment's protected, that community has a voice with development, that we have good planning, and we certainly have done the heavy lifting in terms of legislation in the last 4 years, the Planning Act, the Environment Act, alcohol reforms one we spoke of, but we certainly hear from people that around just delays for the sake of it, and that's something that the Chief Minister has been quite adamant around in terms of time frame. So, we say that people have to lodge something within a certain time frame. Well, we now need to get the public service providing that response within, equally a time frame. So that's certainly something that I think, we will drive forward going.
From what I hear, it sounds like it's an incredibly important thing, to get those approvals processes cracking along
because
a bit faster.
Because whether it's a yes or a no, we
just
need more information.
You need to know.
I think that's not something that's just specific to this government. It's, the Territory government for many years and also Commonwealth. We can certainly hear frustration from people. They just want to know. They want that certainty. So what is a reasonable timeframe to provide a response for is important.
Yeah, and like we all said, whether it's no matter what type of business it is, like we all understand as well, when you're talking about approvals for mine sites and things like that, sometimes it can take a little bit longer. But, when you've got somebody like Drew Wagner from the Minerals Council saying it's taking 4.5 years for somebody to get approval, you sort of start to question, well, if you had the opportunity to do business here or across in Mount Isa or in Queensland, well, where are you going to choose?
Exactly.
You're going to go with the, like he always says, the path of least resistance.
That's right.
So,
People sometimes, well, I think they do, people sometimes forget the fact that an exploration mining company is a commercial business. They're there to make money for their shareholders, just the same as the local coffee shop or the corner supermarket is there to make a profit for the owners or the business. So, and they want to do that properly and they want to do it professionally and they want to do it ethically. They're comfortable working with any government regulation as long as it's fair and it's certain.
And the goalposts don't change.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's critical.
And one observation that I would make, I think, as well, from the result of the election is that I think we need to all sort of understand as well that, when you talk about the private sector and the public sector and the ways in which they've been impacted following on from COVID, the private sector has certainly been impacted quite differently to those who are maybe employed in a public sector job. If you work for the government, government and you are in a steady job where that's not changing, you know, and there's a pay increase before the election and things like that. For those in the private sector, it's a very different story. You know, mm-hmm. we're talking about people taking pay cuts. You're talking about people working mm-hmm. less days. And I think at the end of the day, when I talk about investment into the territory, ultimately what I'm talking about is more job opportunity and more opportunities for those that work in the private sector as well.
That's Katie, right. I think we can find that balance where people are welcome to do business. They know that there's certainty, but we're not cutting green tape or cutting tape just purely to cut it. Like, we do need to have the environment protected. We need to have planning. And so I think that we can strive for that efficiency rather than, you know, this constant cutting this and then, you know, there's accusations that it's that efficiency is the key.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone's suggesting that, and certainly we didn't. It was about moving through the processes faster and ensuring that what processes are there are absolutely necessary, and if they're not necessary, get rid of them. You know, there's no reason just to make people jump through hoops for the sake of it, and we need certainty. The private sector are going to be the ones to get us out of this mess, there's no question. And so, you know, it's incumbent upon the government now to make us a place where the private sector can do what they do best, and government needs to get out of their way.
Now, another topic that I was very keen to talk about this morning, and it is a national one, which has come out a little earlier in the week, is the Belt and Road Initiative. We know that this is something that in Victoria, well, there's sister cities and international education partnerships could be torn up in a sweeping move by the federal government to speak with one voice, is in quotation marks there, on the global stage. Now, the federal government's citing complex national security concerns as it makes the case for its new Australia's Foreign Relations, so State and Territory Arrangements Bill for 2020. Now, under the legislation, Foreign Minister Maurice Payne would be allowed to stop state and territory governments, local government, universities and other organisations from making agreements that she believes go against Australia's foreign policy. Now, this could be an incredibly interesting thing for the territory. I mean, we know that even when we talk about our port, obviously, that's a very obvious obvious one. When you talk about then the
cattle stations.
That's right. Yep. And even
the
here.
The newspaper mentions the pipeline, Gemini, as well. It's hard owned or
so
majority owned.
You know, there's some really sort of interesting projects here that could potentially be impacted in the territory. I guess this is about legislation moving forward. But I'm just keen to get everybody's take on it. And we know that Victoria at the moment, there seems to be a real tussle between the Prime Minister and, of course, the Victorian Premier.
I don't think this is about stopping overseas investment, which, of course, is really important, and particularly in the Northern Territory. You know, and we have great trading relationships with a number of our near and even far neighbours. I think this is just about ensuring that there is that appropriate alignment and oversight. So I certainly see it as a good thing. And, of course, it's only where those individual state and territory arrangements fall outside of the national interest. And I think everyone would agree that we want all of our jurisdictions to be operating within the national interest. So I just see this as a more appropriate alignment and oversight of something that perhaps has just been left for even at that local government level to be making their own, you know, foreign relationships.
Well, I think we've even got a sister cities deal, don't we, Kathleen? Yeah, the Darwin City Council does.
We've
got a few.
China
specifically is Haikau, which has been there, I think, since the 1990 or something. So those will be looked at. But, I mean, it's just another chapter flowing on from that lease, 99-year lease of Darwin Port. Obviously, that Maurice Payne has ruled
which
out.
Which isn't a lease anyway.
Sale. I mean, Maurice Payne has ruled out that this can be looked at because it's a commercial arrangement. It's certainly more, it's the government-to-government aspect.
Yeah. I've explained to many people when they say, oh, the port's just leased, I've said it's leased for 99 years. That's effectively a sale. All pastoral properties are perpetual leases of 99 years, but you never hear, you know, cattle stations are sold and bought. They're not just on lease. So I try and explain to people that the port was sold. The paperwork says 99-year lease, but that's effectively a sale.
I think in terms of... and
no,
not
it's
to
not.
Say,
oh! How ridiculous. It's a lease. That's why it's a lease. If you lease your house for 1 year, that's a 1-year lease. If you lease a port for 99 years...
But they also have the potential to sell it on if they so chose.
Well, that's the government of the day's decision in 97 years. Well, 96 years.
It was the CLP government's decision to lease it. But we'll move on, Katie. In terms of, and I don't mean to use the word post-corona because corona is here for 12 to 18 months. You know, we need that vaccine. But I think the world will be very, it is different. It's already different. And I think that we need to realise, we're talking, I think people will value living in communities in regional Australia, and that's an opportunity for the Northern Territory. But I also think in terms of our national interests, we do need to come together. We saw it with the personal protective equipment, medicines, food security. I think we really do need to, you know, definitely as a jurisdiction, but even nationally, look at what we have, because we can't, you know, we've seen, you know, supply chains internationally.
Absolutely. So it's unbelievable. Yeah. You know, when you think about the fact that for a while there wasn't enough masks, or we weren't able to get masks.
Well, we had one manufacturer in Victoria and we had the military go in and assist them to make sure that now, you know, PPE, there is, well, there's stocks that are, you know, certainly there going forward, so people don't need to panic about that. But, you know, you suddenly see something is not available because it comes in from overseas. Yeah. So I think that that's a really important
point.
And
you wonder as well whether it can, you know, whether, you know, sort of stepping forward from that, whether it can create some opportunity for the Northern Territory as well. You know, in terms of, we know that our exports are amazing as it is, but whether it can create some further opportunity for us here in a place like Darwin.
Yeah, I certainly think so.
In the north, doesn't
that's
it?
Right. That's right.
That's been talked around for so long but hasn't been able to be achieved.
I mean, apart from, you know, hopefully we will get more businesses established in Australia as a consequence of the coronavirus and how it's impacted on our supply chains, our freight, our planes, etc. For example, a lot of the crab industry up here haven't been able to get their product to the southern markets because the planes aren't there. So they're not, I mean, they're still doing some work, but not like they used to, because that's a huge, albeit small industry.
We really value that by Australia.
Yeah, by Australia. Ground. I mean, and I know, I've always tried to buy Aussie products. I don't mind buying things out of Canada, but particularly Aussie, but out of other those sort of countries that are sort of to the north.
Commonwealth countries.
Commonwealth countries. But I think that there is opportunity there. Like, I mean, look at all around the country. Like, you see it on Facebook and social media and elsewhere, you know, the number of businesses that have now sprung up, albeit they might be small, to provide masks, to provide this. I mean, the hand sanitizer. One of the issues with the hand sanitizer of a particular brand, I don't know which one, the product was made in Australia, but the bottles came from China. That was during the critical stage of the shortage. So if we're making the substance in the bottle, why aren't we linking it to manufacturing?
Very good point.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
And you have been listening to The Week That Was with Leah Fanocchiaro. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely weekend, everyone. And don't forget, Palmerston Markets is on tonight. It's a beautiful night for it. Come and have something to eat and pick up some veggies and say hi.
Yummo. And Kathleen Gazzola, I was about to call you Natasha then, everyone in the studio. Kathleen Gazzola from Nine News.
Thanks,
Kezia Purick, thank you for your time this morning.
And I'll put a plug in. The Fred's Pass Show have got a talent quest on.
For Father's Day.
12 o'clock at the Coolinga Central. Now go online, Fred's Pass Show site. They have juniors and open, and there's big cash prizes.
So but is it for the most talented father, or is it?
No, you got to sing and play music.
Oh. I've been practicing.
You could sing to your father.
Or, I've been practicing my interpretive dance.
I want to see the fathers all up there and see who the most talented father is.
I think first prize for open is about $500.
And
it's it's the championships for polo across this weekend too
very
at Friends
cool.
Pass.
Excellent. Well, oh, Natasha Files, thank you for your
Can't
time
get a
this
word
morning.
In there, Wolfie. I didn't even get to say hello when I was introduced. Have a great weekend.
Thank you all so much for your company this morning. You are listening to Mix 104.9.